Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network coming to you live and in color. And we've got an extra special show for tonight. And this month we're going to be featuring men, some things that men do. We also want to let folks know that the last Sunday of the month we're going to do a garden show. So I just like to do a little surprise show around. It's not a surprise, but a show around spring and creating the what's needed to spring into the new year and spring things forward. So without ado, let me read the Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible to generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, and altering the conversation of who we are in the media and empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. April 6th, 2014. North, south, east, west, above, below, within, and around. A moment of silence, please. Thank you. The purpose of the International Black Summit is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their conversation, bring into being their vision for the black community and the world. And some of you may know, some of you may not know, we are going to Belize City this August, July 31st to August 3rd. We'll be celebrating the summit and all its glory in Belize, Central America. So if you don't know what that is, it's near the bottom of Mexico and Honduras. So we're looking forward to you getting yourselves there and looking forward to all of the fruits of the summit. So with that, our show tonight is about men bringing up their children, and we're going to be featuring men all month, as we did women last month. And so again, begin by exploring some of the challenges that is, and I'm going to turn it over to Jill Van Leeson, and I think her dad is with us. We'll find out in a second. But Jill, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be on the show and back and hearing all of you all. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And so is your dad going to be joining us tonight?
He's not. He's actually in the other room. He's on a conference call right now. So he's going to try to pop in if he can, but he had a unscheduled conference call. So you actually might hear him talking, but, yeah, he won't be able to make it right now.
Okay, no problem. So what is it that you would like to share with us about your dad and how he was around bringing your family up.
Well, first I want to, again, thank you for having me on, and I want to acknowledge that today is the birthday of my grandmother, my dad's mom, Catherine Alberta Smith Van Leesten, and today is her birthday, but it's also 21 years ago was the passed away. So Dad and I are celebrating today. We're just celebrating her life and how it was truly 360. She died on the day of her birthday. So what I want to say about my father, as some of you know that know me, Dad raised me. My mom, she left when I was 8. My brother was 7. My other brother was 4. And so Dad raised us and was just incredible. I mean, he was not a strict father, but he gave you that. If he was disappointed in you, he would just give you this look. And you didn't want that look because it just made you feel so friggin' bad. You're like, oh, God, I want to make this man happy and proud of me. I don't want him to give me that look. So he kind of disciplined us with a look, and that's all it took. And I wanted to acknowledge my grandmother because as she would travel more and we were all getting older, she had her apartment, but then she would come and take care of us while he was gone, and eventually Dad did remarry. But, you know, I really like to acknowledge men, especially black men, that raise their children, because you just hear so much in the media that there is a whole other side to a story. And I have about 2 or 3 friends growing up that raised their father, and I have 5 male friends right now that are raising their kids that are my age. So due because maybe of a breakup or for some their girlfriend or wife passed away of cancer. So there are a lot of men out there, and it's just too bad that you don't really hear the story. So I just want to say that in some cases, I just, you know, what you hear, you know, is not always true. And I just always question that when people say, well, black men aren't there for their children. Well, they are, and my dad is one of them. And he's still here for me to this day. So, you know, he's not married anymore, but he's still, you know, he's still here, and I'm just very blessed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, the thing that you shared, that which is I think is very important, is in this day and age, there are now a lot more home dads, and it's not an uncommon thing to hear somebody be a home dad. And it's, you know, I have a friend in Atlanta, and his wife is a doctor, and she's on call, and she's she makes a nice salary. And he's able to stay home and take care of the kids. But you know, the interesting thing, it's not just about staying home and taking care of the kids. He is nurturing them and guiding them. I was with him, it must have been a couple of years ago, and his daughters are probably, I want to say maybe 7 and 5 or so. And this was a couple of years when the oldest one was about 5, so it was a couple of years ago. And we were in Toys R Us, or, you know, one of those places, and I walked down the aisle with them, and she looked over, and he said, you know, here's some Tonka trucks. Now why I remember this so well is because when my daughter was about 5, I asked her the same question. I said, here's some Tonka toys. And my daughter's response to me was, those are boys' toys, Daddy. Those are not for girls. And I was like, I was very surprised that at five she had already determined what was gender appropriate. But what I found very interesting is that what he said to his daughter is, well, you know, women drive trucks too. Women, you know, so it doesn't necessarily have to be a boy's toy or a girl's toy. If you enjoy playing with them, then I'll get you one. And I thought that that was a very unique approach to rearing his two girls. And I always thought that, wow, I wish I had had that mindset when I was coming up with my daughter. So it was shocking to me. Now, would a woman have said that? I don't know. Possibly. But again, it's not about whether a woman would have said it or a man would have said it. It's that being open to the possibility of there's nothing that can hold you back. And so that's what I heard in the statement. Not that it was better that he said it or not said it or so forth, but that he was willing to go there with his daughter and not have her be limited in any way, especially around gender. So I thought that was pretty, that was kind of mind-blowing for me, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's interesting you said that because I remember one year Dad bought me a Pittsburgh Steeler football helmet. And I would wear that helmet, and people would think, okay, is something wrong with her? You know, this is, you know, 1970-something. What's going on over there in that household? But it was my football helmet, and because my brothers had their football helmet, so I got a football helmet too. And I didn't see, and he didn't see anything odd about it. If he was just buying all three of his kids football helmets. As far as toys, that's interesting you said that. We pretty much did a lot of, I rode bikes a lot with my brothers, and with my brothers we'd ride our bikes, and we would play store, we would read books. We were only allowed 1 hour of television, and my brother is really smart, so he would always want to watch the news. So we would end up watching Walter Cronkite, and we really weren't big TV watchers at all. But we would just mainly play games, and then we were always outside with our friends. So I had my female friends where when I would go to their house and stuff, we would play dolls and stuff like that. But as far as toys in the house, it was pretty much if they got a basketball, I got a basketball, you know. But I did, you know, my grandmother made sure I had the little girly things. Like my dad painted my whole room pink, and everything was pink. And it was so, I had a pink canopy bed. Everything was pink. He went overboard. Yes. And I didn't really like I didn't really like the color pink. Well, I could not, at eight, I couldn't tell him that I can't stand this color pink. But now, of course, I like it, but I'm an AKA. But I was like, I do not like this color pink. But everything was so pink and fluffy. And I wanted, like, you know, my brothers, their rooms were so sporty and fun. But I kind of had to adapt to my pink, fluffy room. But that's interesting you said that about toys and everything. It was kind of, it was different. My grandmother made sure I had the dolls and everything, but if he bought them a basketball, I got a basketball. If he bought them a bike, I got a bike, you know. So, yeah. The other thing, too, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, the other thing, too, that I want to stress was the fact of education. And when we were graduating from high school, all of my friends, they got the birthday party, I mean, the graduation parties and the big gifts and everything. And so we were kind of like, you know, where's our party? Where are our gifts? And Dad said, oh, no. You all going to school in the fall. You're going to college. You know, you get your party 4 or 5 years later. So it was like a given, like we didn't get the parties and stuff, but it's almost like we didn't really care because we were like excited about going to college and stuff. So it was, the way Dad raised us was so good. Like I'm just so glad now I can say this, and I even told him a couple of years ago, when I started communicating with my mother, that was the best thing my mother could have done, was to ask my dad to take care of us, because who knows where we would have been. And he doesn't know this, but we're going to get, my brother's getting going to rent out a house in Cape Cod this summer, and we're going to all go up there, and we're going to get him an appreciation cake, and we're going to celebrate this summer, celebrate him, and let him know how much we appreciate the fact that he, you know, really just, he did what a father is supposed to do, take care of their children, right? But he did it in such a graceful, just wonderful way, and we just want to give him an appreciation cake. So we're real excited. We've been planning that, so we're real excited about it. Just
That's awesome.
Give him a party this summer and a big appreciation cake, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to it.
Wow, that's really great. You know, that's something that I think that we as families need to do much more often, to celebrate and honor the people around us while they're still living, while they can actually hear it and appreciate it and get the communication. So that's a wonderful thing. Wonderful thing. This is the International Black Summer Talk Show Network. We're coming to you live every Sunday from 8 to 9 p.m. And tonight's topic is men raising their children. And we've got a couple of listeners with their hands up, so I'm going to get to you in a second. And I want to let you know that if you'd like some more information on the International Black Summit, please check out our website at www.blacksummit.org. We've got some great information. We're going to be putting up some travel information to get to Belize. Again, we're going to Belize City in Belize this August for our annual summit event. Let me open the mic of area code 773-510. Go ahead, you're live. 773-510. Would you like to?
Yeah. Hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay. How you going?
Good. Good. Is this Sean?
This is Daryl, actually.
Oh, Daryl. Okay. Hi, Daryl. I heard you were calling in. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, what would you like to share with us?
Well, I have two daughters, 10 and 14, and I enjoy parenthood. I enjoy being a dad. I enjoy getting to know them, and getting to know them it helps me get to know myself. My 10-year-old and I have been bonding a lot lately. She's fearless. I mean, she's been fearless since she was, you know, since she was a toddler. I noticed that fearlessness, and then, you know, the world told her, you know, that she's supposed to fear things, and so I had to remind her that she was fearless, and, you know, she's just, you know, got a lot of activity. She's in gymnastics, and she sings in the chorus. She plays the stand-up bass. She's on Girls on the Run. She's doing a lot of stuff, and, you know, I used to run, and she has to run a 5K, and so, you know, I told her I'd run it with her, and I said, you know, I'm buying jogging shoes, and I'm running again, and I'm saying that's a good thing. That's a great thing. So,
wow.
You know, it's just amazing. Yeah, it's amazing how you inspire your kids for sure, but, you know, they inspire you.
Sure.
So, I mean, I just think, the bonding, I think, is very important. The more you know them, the better off things will be. And, listening and teaching them different things and just being there, I mean, it's exciting. It's a beautiful thing. So...
Yes, it is, Daryl. Yes, it is. I, you know, when you talk about fearless, I remember my daughter was probably about 2 years old, couldn't have been more than two, and, you know, I took her to the park. And I was always amazed at how much attention that I would actually get because I'm hanging out at the park with my daughter.
Sure.
You know, and people are always, oh, that's so nice, that's so nice. But anyway, I'm at the slide, and the slide is high. This is like, you know, one of those high slides. And she says, you know, my daughter says to me, you know, she wants her to go up. So I go up and I go up behind her so she doesn't fall back. She gets up to the top. I tell her, okay, hold on. And then I jump down and then I run to the front. And then I said, and I tell her, go ahead. Now, she hesitates and then she lets go. And, of course, she's not old enough to slow it down. So she is just sliding down this thing. And then I catch her at the bottom. And as soon as I touch her feet down, she's running back to do it again. And, you know, those are the moments that, as a parent, you just, you can't, you know, there's nothing that can recreate that. There's nothing sweeter, better, more exhilarating for you as a parent to enjoy your children like that. And, you know, those are one of those special moments.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree completely.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So she inspired you. Got you running again, huh?
She got me running again. Yes, she did. Yes, she did. And she just, you know, I just tell her, you know, like, just try things. Try, you know, go out there and you know, she's going to be very well-rounded. I told her, you know, recently, I said, you know, one day, you know, the things, there are going to be certain things that stick, and that's going to be your niche. She's like, why do you, and we, I was talking to her, I'm a very spiritual person, and I was talking to her about, I think all of us have these gifts, and we're supposed to use these gifts to serve God and God's people. And so she was like, what's my niche? What's my thing? And I said, well, I don't really know. I'm not sure. You know, that's something for you to find out. You have to find it in yourself. And, you know, it made me think about it because I teach, I act, you know, I write. I'm in the arts, so I'm definitely living my calling. And, you know, I teach my kids to do the same thing. And so it's just interesting, you know. That's so it makes you think about, you know, your spirituality, and there's all these different types of things you try to teach them. You know, you make a lot of mistakes when you first start being a parent. It's not a book or anything you can do to really prepare for it. You just have to do it. And I think the more honest you are with yourself, with all of all your imperfections, all of the great, all of the challenges, all of these things that make up who you are, when you're more honest about that, you can be a much better parent. I think when you're not, and you're living with your insecurities and fears, you know, it can get in the way of great experiences you can have with your kids.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very good. That's very good.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Yeah. Well, good. Well, thank you. Thanks for sharing. To hang out and hang out with us and jump into the conversation where you, I'm going to keep your mic open, so just feel free to flow, okay?
I will do. Thank you.
Okay. Well, great. Great having you. And we've got a couple of guests on the show that we haven't heard from in a while, Mr. Jerry.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine. How you feel?
I'm doing great, brother. I'm doing great. I'm blessed, and I am extending myself in all kinds of crazy manners around economic development. And I'm enjoying life with the new experiences and the new blessings and the new possibilities that I've been exploring. So keeping pretty busy.
That's cool.
Now, you know, one of the things I want to say is that that parenting isn't restricted just to actual parents. Because as men, we're uncles and we're brothers and we are grandfathers and we're just sometimes just male role models in the community. And so there are lots of roles for us as men inside of our community. And so I'll extend the conversation to not just strictly parenting, but participating in young people's lives. Because sometimes you're in a young person's lives more than the parents, because they're feeling a little bit more trust or openness or whatever to relate to you, because you're a man in the community. I've got, looks like Shakesha is there. Just open up your mic, Shakesha. Go ahead. You're on live on the air. Shakesha, are you there? 619-788. Oh, we just lost her. Okay, great. So anything you guys want to say or see about that conversation of uncles and brothers and grandparents?
Well, you can hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, well, what I know for me, I have a niece that lives in New York. She's in college, and she working. And then what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to be there for her. And then most of, and lately, she will be calling for like about a good 3 or 4 months. And I find out that I never thought that I have an impact on her life in a long time. I mean, my brother told me, so, you know, she always talked highly about you, you know, but I never thought that she really paid attention to what I was doing. And it's very rewarding that when you have somebody that have a niece that called you, make sure everything's fine, and they ask, you know, what should I do? And, you know, I don't know what it is. And they see you as somebody that they could trust. And that makes me feel good. And then when I first got my own place in Newport News, when I was with my brother in Hampton, when I left New York, I make my business and try to, like, watch out for the young ones who do not have fathers or mothers around, or see what I could do, or help them out, you know, get them certain things, or wait with them on the bus. Or sometimes if their parents not home yet, I tell them, wait at the house. And, you know, try to protect, try to do whatever I can to serve the community. And it's very, very rewarding, you know, to be doing that. You know, so it's always a role as a man could do. It's never limited.
Great. Okay, thank you, sir. I'm gonna go back to Dell. What is one of your highlight moments with your two daughters? I'm sure there are many, but try and come up with one or two.
Okay. Did you want me to respond to your opening question as well?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was really blessed as a child. I had, you know, a great father, uncles, godfather, a lot of very positive men in my life, and they led by example. You know, it wasn't always about, you know, sitting you down and teaching you a lesson, but it was just through example. You know, they went to work every day, and they took care of their families, and so different things like that. So I think it's very important. I teach at Columbia College. When I first started, I used to just go teach my class, go home. You know, it was pretty much a job. I enjoyed it, but it was a job. And then I realized that a lot of people were watching me. You know, and that there were, you know, people who didn't have really a lot of definitions of what a man was, you know, from where they came from. And so I was that definition. And so I started getting involved more. And, you know, I've had a lot of men ask me a lot of different questions, you know, and they're the same. They're asked in different ways, but it's the same question. The question is, how do you be a man? You know, a lot of them, they want to know when they don't have it. And they'll get it from anywhere. I mean, you know, it could be someone with a negative influence on them that'll teach them, but this is what a man is. So it's very important to understand that you are you know, a positive force in people's lives, not just for the young men, but for the young ladies too. I teach once a week at Austin High School, and, you know, one of the things I think about is that I may, for some of them, I may be the only man in their life that is not concerned with their body. You know, so I think, and I make sure that they know that I'm concerned with their mind and their spirit. So, I mean, I think that's important, you know, because we do have some men that like young ladies that age, unfortunately. But, man, funnest times we've had. That's a good question. We love going to the movies. I guess last year our spring breaks fell on the same, and I wanted to do something with them. So I found out that it was they were having an exhibit for the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington and the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation. So we went to D.C. and it was expensive to fly, so we decided to drive, and it was a great decision because we just made a whole trip out of it. We drove to Cleveland. We have family in Cleveland. You know, we woke up and it was snowing. You know, that's how it is in the Midwest, and we drove, you know, on the turnpike and got to D.C. and stayed in Fairfax, Virginia with some more family and went to D.C. and saw the exhibit and saw a lot of other things, saw the King Memorial, which is amazing, the King statue, and had a great time with family and going to see things. Saw our uncle and aunt who were celebrating 50 years of marriage. We weren't going to be able to be there for their celebration, so we went to see them in Lawrenceville, Virginia. There's one stoplight in Lawrenceville, Virginia, and it was the country. So it was just a great trip. It was a great trip. So that was something that I was proud of. We had a great time. You know, we had a lot of fun together. It was a great bonding time. And, you know, with one in high school, where, you know, you feel like you have to make appointments for just to see her now, it was good to do it at the time that we did it. We stayed in the hotel just one night. I needed some rest, and it was just really cool. I mean, they were, you know, we had a good time. They were very helpful. We saw a lot of people that they had seen but didn't remember or just didn't have a relationship with. And I found out that my daughter's ride or die. That's what we like to call it when a woman who just has your back no matter what. And they just – and also just tough. I mean, and they just roll with the flow. We were in a different place almost every night, different environment completely, and they were comfortable wherever we went. It was really cool. So that was probably the highlight for me.
Yeah, that sounds like an adventure, man.
Yeah, it was.
Cool. That's a great bonding experience. Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Takesha is back. Your mic is open.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. Hello, everybody. What a great topic we're having about, we're having it about a lot of things. I know one aspect or one side of the prism that we're looking through is one, I heard Jill, you know, sharing her experiences being raised by her dad. And I heard my buddy there, Jerry. Hello, Jerry. I've been thinking of you.
Okay, yeah.
And, yeah. And then, you know, I was just looking in my life to see how I could share for them. And the first thing that came up for me was I raised my children alone. And when I say alone, the fathers weren't in the home. But it was so many men from the community that assisted me. And especially want to acknowledge my father. Oh, my goodness. It was so many things that came up that my father helped me with, especially for my sons. I have my oldest child is a daughter, and then I had two sons. And, I mean, things that you wouldn't even think about. I'm one of those people, you know, I had read a lot of books. I thought I was, you know, checking on everything I needed to check. And this one's going to sound really funny, but it was very important to me. When my oldest son got to be about maybe six, I remember one day I went to my father because he helped me a lot. And I said, Daddy. And he said, what? I said, I need you to take my oldest son to the bathroom and show him how to pee. He said, huh? I said, yeah, Daddy, I don't know what you guys do in there. I don't know what men do when they go pee. I said, I have ideas, but I don't know what you're really doing. And I said, he's a boy. You know, he probably needs that. And, you know, I continued to talk and talk. And so then my father just put his hand on my shoulder. He said, don't worry, don't worry. Yeah, he said, I'll take them in there. And so then he took them into the bathroom. And they came out. They were in there about 20 minutes. And then they came out, and my father was just laughing. And I was like, what's funny? He said, well, wait until the kids go out. And so when the kids got busy and left, I said, why were you laughing? He said, well, I took them in there to show them. He said, so I thought I should pee. And he said, at one moment, he had to take my son, Amafika, and kind of push him back up against the wall. And I said, why did you push him up against the wall? He said, because he was, like, getting in the way. I got worried he was going to get peed on. He said, my son was, like, looking. Like, you know, my daddy said, I thought I was going to pee on my grandson. Didn't want to pee on my grandson. So I'm saying, you know, and my son never asked me anything. He didn't, like, come say, well, what was granddaddy doing? Or, you know, because I was the sole child raiser, anytime you taught my kids something, they would always come back and talk with me, like to check it out with me. But he never, ever had a conversation with me about that. So whatever he needed to learn, he learned it. And then my father was there just giving him advice about men and what men do. And he actually instructed my son. He said, men do not sleep past the birds singing. If you wake up as a man and the birds are singing, you're late. You're already late. So you're supposed to be up before the birds. And then he taught them, one thing he taught me, and like the gentleman said earlier, it's so important that men are in their children's lives. Because for me as a daughter, he taught me that a man should carry a 3 handkerchiefs. And I always remember this about my father. He had 3 handkerchiefs. And one day I asked him, I said, Daddy, why you got so many handkerchiefs? And so he looked at me, and so then he said, he pointed to the handkerchief that he carried up in the pocket of his suit. He said, you know, that's kind of like my pretty handkerchief. That's my handkerchief people look at. He said, that handkerchief is for looking at. And I said, oh. Then he reached in his back pocket, and I knew he had a handkerchief there. He pulled that one out. He said, now this is my handkerchief. He says, when I have to blow my nose, if I have to wipe my hands off, anything like that, he said, this is the handkerchief that I use. Then he reached in a pocket, I guess it was his side pocket, and he took a handkerchief off. Now he said, this is for my lady. He said, this is a lady's handkerchief. And I said, ladies? He said, yes, when I was growing up dating, I was taking a young lady out. If there was ever a time, like maybe her hands were wet, she might blow her nose, something like this. He said, this is the handkerchief I would offer her, and nobody would use this, including me. It's always there for her. I was like, wow. And as a young woman, as I grew up, I would watch men for handkerchiefs. You know, if you had one, okay. If you had two, I was like, oh, you pass a C, you get higher than a C with me. And Lord have mercy if you have 3 handkerchiefs. You know, Mada. You got a real high grade. You're off the chart, in other words.
Cum laude, yeah.
Cum laude, yeah. You're a cum laude of a man. And, I mean, that's always stuck with me and things that he told me about what makes a man. He had another funny thing about men wore socks. You know, men always have socks. And, you know, I didn't how much it stuck with me until I would be dating. And I would find somewhere, way before the night was over, that I would check to see if the man had socks on. You know, I'd do things like drop something from the table so I could lean down under the table, And I'd be looking, does he have socks on? So those things sound comical, but I'm telling you they were really important to me. And he helped me a great deal with my sons, and my sons, even now he's passed away, they talk about, but you know, the things Granddaddy taught us. I wish he was here so he could teach us more things. Even the way he would punish them. One time my youngest son did something, and I took him over to my father, and I said, talk to him, Daddy. Talk to him. And then when I came back, he had him chopping a tree. He had a hatchet, and he was chopping at this tree to my son. And I said, what are you doing? He said, Granddaddy told me I had to chop this tree down. He said, so I'm chopping the tree. I said, oh, excuse me, let me let you keep chopping. And then I went in and asked my father, I said, Daddy, what do you have him doing? He said, he needs to chop that tree down. He said, had I had a big shovel, I would have made him dug a hole and take the dirt out, but then he had to put the dirt back. He said, I didn't have a big enough shovel for the work that he needed to do. So I gave him this project of cutting down the tree. And my youngest son has referred back to that many times. When he's looking at something he's messed up on or something he should have done another way, he said, I should go chop down a tree, huh? He said, you know, Granddaddy would have me chop down a tree now. So I'm going to stop because, you know, you're getting me ready to cry because, like I said, my father's passed on. So they're bringing up great memories of what it is to be a man. And like you said, it doesn't have to be biological. I had men in my life who took on raising my sons inside of manhood training. And I had one man tell me, he said, as the mother, you can take your sons to the bridge of manhood, but you as a woman can never cross them. It must always be a man. And I said, woo. And luckily a man came into my life that it was at a school. He came to the school and said to him, you know, I like to do manhood training with the young men here. And to this day, that man still means a lot to my son. You know, he always speaks of our brother. You know, so I'm glad you guys are having this discussion. I think it's a great thing for us to talk about as a community. Thank you, Jerry, and all of the men that are sharing. And I want to take time to just acknowledge Glenn. Glenn's been one of those men in the summit for us as women with children. He always takes the time. He works with young people. And, you know, just thank you, Glenn. That really has mattered for me, and I'm sure for other women in the summit. And back to you, Glenn.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, my dear. Henrietta.
Hey, how you all doing?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm good. Been hanging out with the Alabama State Choir today, and just left a church where they were performing, and oh my God, that's really some great men that are going to be, well, they already are role models. They went to 4 churches today and performed, and ours was the second one. And then I decided I was going to come and see them because I really didn't get a chance to watch them when they were at our church today because I was trying to help them get in and out of the building so they could get to the third church. So, I promised them that I would come and see them tonight, and I got an opportunity to do that. And what a performance. Oh, my God. They are just excellent. So, but some great men and with some great role models and so that's it. I don't want to take up any time because I want to hear, you know, what everybody else is talking about. I know we have some great, great fathers and some great role models on the show tonight. So I want to hear them, Glenn. But that's what I've been doing.
All right, my dear. Well, thank you. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
314-381-3831.
Yeah,
I was just going to add. Well, it's an echo.
Yeah, there's a big echo. Yeah, that's me.
I was going to add to the lady who was talking about her father and the handkerchief. You know, That is so true. There's a special way that you take a handkerchief when you give it to a lady. You take it by the corner and you shake it one time. You lay it across your other hand and you take it in the middle where all the sides in the corner hang down like a teepee. And you set it in the palm of your hand and you hand it to her. That's the proper way to hand a lady a handkerchief. And, you know, as far as the manhood training, yes, the lady can take the son to the bridge. But also, when it's time for the son to come back over to the bridge, it's the mother who decides whether or not the son is a man or not. And if she says no, then he has to go back out and do some more training. And one other thing I wanted to add, you know, I witnessed this in Burkina Faso, where the pregnant mother was in a ceremony with the grandfather present, the grandmother, and the priest. And the baby spoke through the mother's mouth. And the baby said who they were coming back and also what they wanted to have prepared for when they came back. And the womb is just a portal for the ancestors to come back into this world. That's why they don't perform abortions. And one other thing, when the baby boy comes off the tit, the baby boy is put with the grandfather, and the grandfather raised the boy to adolescence because the father was just a boy last month. The grandfather is the greater volume of knowledge. So,
yeah.
It's a lot
of
things.
I've heard that about the, I can't think of the group.
It's the Dagara.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Exactly. Where they're
Burkina Faso, Northern Ghana.
Yeah, with the grandfather, really learn what it is, and then they come back to be with the father after they've gone through the training with the grandfather. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
very
and
good.
See that way, the grandparents always was valuable. They didn't stick grandparents in an old folks' home. They was always valuable. They served a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were always shoring up the information in the village. You know, that's why the whole village concept is so important in our African culture, is because they have a place for knowledge and learning and to bring that to the next generation.
Mm-hmm. So, and it's a way that you if you're in a city, if you're walking with a lady, you never let her be on the traffic side of your shoulder. She's always on the inside. And the proper way to handle her up the steps is to grab her, to put your right hand under her elbow and her left hand over your left hand, you know, as a fist, as to steady herself as she goes up the steps. So those are things that, some people still understand how to teach boys, young men, how to be a man, especially when they're around a woman.
Yeah, matter of fact, that's one of the things that I taught my daughter. I says, the man is always on the outside. And it was interesting. I actually did some research to find out, back in the days before there were cars, the horses would sometimes, go out of control, as do the cars as well. And so you were always there to protect the woman who's on the inside track in case something was happening or some kind of harm was coming your way, that you could still be in a position to protect her.
Right, and when people is oncoming, you always step in front of the woman, and she steps around you as you turn your back to those who are oncoming so she can, go by. So it's a lot of things that, I was listening to the lady. She was talking about her father, and her father was a wealth of knowledge, and I really appreciate the story that she told.
Yeah, it was a great story. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Leanne.
Go ahead.
Chakasha again.
When the gentleman was sharing about things about the African tradition and things that happen in the like that traditionally, I've traveled to Africa and I had dated men from Africa. And one of the things in my daughter's father's from Mali, and what someone explained to me, I think it's when we were visiting Kenya, they say you have the father and the uncle. And they were saying for much of the child's life, the father's just kind of in the background, and it's the uncle. And the gentleman told me that, I said, I'm kind of confused. Why would that be the way it's done? And he said, it's because they're preparing for a situation. And I said, well, what is the situation? They said, if the father dies, the uncle steps in and takes his place. And the reason the father kind of receives is so that if that actually happens, for the child, it's not someone missing or something gone, because the uncle would just step into that space, and because the child has always seen the uncle exhibiting those kinds of things, the child doesn't get this sense of loss when the father passes away. And even though I didn't marry my daughter's father, just recently, like within the last 5 years, my daughter and I both discovered, my daughter first discovered that her father passed away. And, you know, she was really, you know, it made an impact. And as she was starting to look at her father's side of the family, she met her uncle, her father's brother. And, I mean, he just stepped into that spot. He started calling her on a very regular basis. He introduced her to the rest of the family members. And then there was one time we were using these calling cards because my daughter was out of the country, and I couldn't contact her. And so she wrote me on Facebook. She said, call my uncle. I called her uncle, and I said, oh, I'm having trouble reaching my daughter. She said something about a calling card. He said, just a minute. Call me back in about 10 minutes. And he said it real abruptly. I needed to stop talking and just listen to him. I hung up the phone, and then in about 10 minutes I called him back. And when I called him back, he gave me a card. He had purchased a calling card. He gave me the number. He told me how to use it. After he was clear that I knew how to do it all, he said, okay, I have to go now, and he hung up. And I kind of sat there, and I was like, well, what was he doing? And something occurred like that again where I needed that calling card, and I called him. He said, do you need money on the card? And I said, well, yeah, I think I do. He said, okay, I'll take care of that. He said, anything else? I said, no. But this time when he got off, I really got that sense of, like, him taking care of things, just like I would call my father and say, I need money, or my car stuck over here. And I really got the sense of him, he was totally being in the space that was his space to be in. So I just wanted to share that.
Awesome.
This is Jill. I want to share something I just found out this weekend. I was with my father and a couple of his friends. A lot of my friends, I call them, like Uncle Allie, Uncle Jack, Uncle Lenny. A lot of his friends, we would call them Uncle. And but this one guy was my father's friend, and his name is Joe Folks. And I was sitting next to him at this meeting. We had an NAACP meeting this weekend. And he said, Jill, he said, I don't know if you remember this. He said, but it was in the early 80s, and you and your friends were walking downtown, and there was like a little scuffle, a little fight going on about a block away. He said, and I saw you and your three friends, and I was on the other side of the street. And he said, do you remember that day? Do you remember seeing me that day? And, you know, of course I did not know what he was talking about. I said, no. He said, well, I walked with you all on the other side of the street. I made sure that you all were not going to get hurt by the guys down the street, like the fight wasn't going to, like, move down the street. He said, I walked with you, and when you all turned the corner, I knew you all were safe. I turned around and walked out and did what I, you know, was what I had to do. And I said, oh, my goodness, you are my guardian angel. And he said, well, you'll be surprised how many of us looked out for you. And I thought that was, I just heard that on Saturday. I thought that was so moving because my dad has a lot of good friends, and we do call him Uncle This or Uncle That. And just to hear that story where this one, you know, Joe Folks, I never called him Uncle Joe, but he was a close friend of my dad's, and here he was, you know, looking out for me. He said, you know, I knew who you were, and I, you know, I knew some of your friends, so I just wanted to make sure that you were going to be all right. So that whole thing about family and stuff, that, or whoever's in your family, you make them your family, that's real. And that's it.
Well, you know, that's so perfect because that really, I say that this whole conversation is really about our authentic selves. You know, as we grow, yeah, as refine, you know, who we are and what we're up to. And the discovering of that.
I want to add one more thing, too, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Here's something that, you know, this being a business summit, and something that, you know, we as African-American black people here in this country don't do. But if you're sitting down, if you're talking business, discussing business and negotiating, your children, older children, should be there at the table. Because at that point in time, you are making decisions today that they will have to live with in the future when you're gone. So they should know the intricate details of how those decisions came about so that they can either carry on or handle their business in the appropriate manner.
Well, I'm going to take that a step further because the other part of that is that also, when you're in business and you're making decisions, you're right. Part of it is understanding what the consequences of them are down the line, but it also manages you and shows you what it is like to run a business. You know, what are the calls that you have to make in terms of, you know, I have to lay somebody off in order to do this product line, or I need to get an additional income from something or somewhere else in order to support an expansion. So those are the things that if we're not discussing in front of our children, they don't get the benefit and the opportunity and the knowledge of running a business and what all that entails. Very good. Well, we've got about 4 minutes left here. Actually, it's less than that. Oh, my goodness. We've got about 3 minutes. I'm going to give it back to you, Henrietta.
Okay. Thank you, Glenn. I just, like, have so many ideas now about the rest of this month because this month we are committed to honoring men, and I'm just like in awe of where this conversation is just today, and where it started, and what it has led, you know, like what it's leading to, and where it went tonight. So, I'm committed to honoring men. I believe that there's nothing greater than an empowered man or woman, and I'm about empowering men as well as women. And last month we spent the entire month honoring women because it was Women's Awareness Month. I'm not sure if there's a Men's Awareness Month or whatever, but for the International Black Summit, we've declared that April is honoring men. And so as we unfold week by week, you will hear more and more about men and what they're made of and how they think and how they feel and how they respond, how they were raised, you know, what they believe, and just as much information as we can possibly bring to you about men, because an empowered woman, somewhere in her life, must come across an empowered man. She doesn't have to marry one, she doesn't have to live with one, but she may have to work with one, and she may go to church with one, and she may live next door to one. And so for me, one of the ways to stop the violence that's going on is for people to learn to communicate with each other at a particular level. And so as we empower women, I believe we should empower men as well. And at the in the International Black Summit, what's available in the summit is acknowledgement, praise, and celebration of who we are as a people and the contribution we are to the universe. And the we includes male and female. So thank you, all of our guests tonight. Thank you so much, you know, for joining us. Thank you to our friend from Missouri, who's always listening and sharing with us. Shakesha, we always love you. And thank you so much for your stories. You can contact us at blacksummit.org. If you have a suggestion for something you would like to know about men or something you would like to share as a man, just send us an email at go to blacksummit.org and send us an email. Remember to go to blacksummit.org and register for the annual summit event in Belize, July 31st through August 4th. We will be there, and we will have more and more information for you. Thank you so much, Glenn, for jumping in there. Yes, ma'am. We're out of time.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll bring my Belize glass next week.
Say it again.
I wanted to give a Belize glass.
Go ahead.
The Belize Blast is we're going to be there, as you've been hearing. And just wanted to give you one aspect of Belize for you to be thinking about. Belize is full of pyramids. Everywhere you look, there's pyramids. They're not the African-structured pyramids. They're the Maya pyramids. But there's a whole story around that, and I just want to let you know pyramids are awaiting you. Please register and check them out more on blacksummit.org.
Thanks. Thank you, Chitasha.
On that note, good night. And God bless.
God bless you tonight.